Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 284. And my guest this week is someone that I've been lining up for a long time. And a lot of you guys have been asking for a long time. And I say this all the time. I'm saying time a lot, aren't I? That it's all about timing. See, time again. And this was just perfect. I'm so glad we didn't get to talk a year ago when we were lining this up, or a couple of years ago. Because this was the perfect time, and this conversation, I couldn't be happier with how it went, how heavy we got early on, how open, how painfully open Joe was. Yeah, it's great. Before we get into all that, I'll talk more at the end, but I do need to give two shout-outs to the same person, Craig Parkinson and his Two Shot podcast. If you're a fan of Joe, go and listen to him on both of his visits there. They're fantastic. It's real podcasting at its absolute best. Also need to give love for all the love that you guys gave to last week's episode with Sarah Pascoe and the bonus episode. That was lovely. I'm going to jump into the podcast now and I'll talk to you more at the end. Obviously, speechdevelopmentrecords.com. I mean, what am I meant to push to you guys? Any day I record it, it varies. We sell umbrellas, but we also sell swimwear and sunglasses. So that's pretty much the broken ecosystem that we have these days. So, yeah, there's that. And obviously, patreon.com/ScroobiusPip. We will have just had the Distraction Pieces Rewind this week, maybe. Anyway, let's get on with the podcast. In fact, I recommended a podcast there. I spoke about Sarah Pascoe's visit last week. Her new podcast, Sex Power Money, or Sex Money Power, is storming the charts and is amazing, and was recommended this week by Podbible. Podbible is a magazine that we do, me, Stu Whiffen and Adam Richardson, we do to promote podcasts. We've just launched the Podbible podcast, so I'd really appreciate it if you can go and give the first episode a listen. Each week we're sitting down with podcasters to talk about their podcast and to recommend their favorite podcast, but they're like 20 to 30 minute episodes, so they're kind of a meal supplement rather than a meal replacement in your weekly podcast diet. It's for that gap at the end of your journey when you've finished a podcast but you don't really want to start another big long one. So that's where Podbible slots in. If you have it on automatic download and subscribe and all that, it will just take up a tiny amount of your device's memory, because they're short, and then you can have it there as a break glass in case of emergencies, in case that tube journey takes longer than expected and you're not on Wi-Fi. Yeah, that's the plan. I'm going to get on with this podcast and let you listen to the absolutely amazing Joseph Gilgan. Right, we have begun. I'm joined by Joseph Gilgan. How are you?
I'm doing
called
well,
you Joseph
thanks,
and everything.
Thanks,
all formal.
Yeah, really nice.
How's it all going?
It's going really well, thanks, dude. I've been brought a banana there because I don't eat things.
That's always handy. Did you have that on press days and things like that? Because I always used to have that on music videos. I couldn't eat for the whole day.
I can't get it down, me man. Yeah. Like, these sort of doing, I mean, it's honestly, like, I'm not just saying it. I do enjoy it. I quite enjoy an interview. I like having a chat on the podcasts and stuff. I mean, I've done very few of both.
Or the Two Shot ones are classic. I love Craig. He's a pal.
He's
and they're just
fucking nuts, isn't he?
They're such good conversations. Because it's not an interview, is it? It's just a chat.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially, I mean, that's ideal for me.
Yeah.
Interviews. This is what I think I mean to say is I don't mind the process. I think, in all honesty, like, I'd rather avoid him if I can. And I think, and I was saying in one of the interviews, and I'm not sure that, I never feel like what I have to say is all that important, you know?
Yeah.
And like, what fucking difference am I going to really make here?
Yeah.
And actually after the Two Shot podcast, and I wanted to be as candid as I could, you know, I wanted to be as open as I could about my condition. And I thought, this is where I'll start, really. It's a good spot to practice, because eventually, of course, once Boracic's out and we start the press for that, I'm going to need stuff to, I need to be able to make sense of it and give myself something to talk about. I've forgotten my fucking thing because I'm stoned. I had a point to this.
No, it's, I mean, it's the balance anyway, because again, there's always the argument of letting the art talk for itself. Or, but, you know, you need to do promo to get people to watch the art talk of yourself. And the thing that struck me and got me really excited on the first two episodes of Brassic, so straight off the bat, was number one, that there's a character that's bipolar and it's not his defining characteristic. It's part of his life.
I'm really glad you know.
But the other thing was, it's weird. It's something I've been going on about for ages, because I've had a stutter all my life. And yep. I'm a patron of an organisation called Stammer, and I did this post the other week about their new thing, and it's the most interaction I ever got. And I started to panic, because I realised it had been liked by a lot of people in film and TV.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to say, look, I can still do roles. I can hold it down on set.
Exactly.
But also, I also pointed out, you need to have more characters that have a stutter and it's not their defining characteristic. And Brassic has exactly that.
The first episode
is like, this lad's stuttering and no one's highlighting it. Yeah. And no one's here's the punchline or the joke. It's like, it's just part of it.
No, it's just a thing. Like, one of them's gay, it's just a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just part of who they are.
Well, that was great as well, because the reveal of him being gay isn't a big reveal.
No,
it's a passing conversation.
I felt very, very strongly about it. I'm really, really glad that came across, man.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how relieved I am to it. That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah.
And I spoke about this fucking constantly on the build-up, especially creating the world. I'm like, listen, you know, we can't make us... I'm sick of making us... We make it an issue. We make it an issue by making it a bloody issue. Like, it isn't. Like, you know, for fuck's sake, none of it matters. It's all just superficial, really. Like, well, maybe it's not superficial. That's the right. What I'm saying is, I didn't want to make a spectacle of these people's... I don't even want to call them vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Because the people I meet, like you don't seem vulnerable to me at all. You have a stutter. You don't seem remotely vulnerable. You seem like a very confident man.
The way I've always described it is, I've got a stutter. I've got a mate who came on my podcast once, my mate Sam, and people struggle to understand him more because he's a Geordie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah,
it's just, but no one's, it's not,
we've all got our
being a Geordie isn't a condition.
Exactly.
It's part of who he is.
It is, it's just where he's from.
And it's the same on all these things. And same with bipolar. It's like, obviously it is a condition, it's something that needs to be taken into account, but it's not something that should be ruling anyone out of anything or anything else, you know?
Well, that thing you said right there, you just mentioned, you said, you know, you're a patron of this what is it?
Stammer. It's the British Stammering Association, so it's a charity.
You're a patron of that association, and there is, once you expose your vulnerabilities like that, there is a concern that you need to sort of go, listen, I can still do my job.
That was exactly, honestly, my next post after it had blown up, because again, it was exactly that. It was getting liked by some directors I really admire, some writers I really admire, and I was like, well, these are people I want to work with. Yeah. I don't want to get the gig just for quota filling. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
As if it's, he's got this issue. I want to get it on merit, but equally, I didn't want to write myself off or thinking he can't play that role because he won't be able to get the words out.
Stupid cunt will stop for it all.
Exactly,
you know, like,
exactly.
And it's the same for me. Like, I'm not, you know, I worry that people think I'm not going to employ him. He's going to have a fucking meltdown you know, like do something fucking stupid. Like, my whole career I've had bipolar. My whole career I've dealt with the highs and lows of it.
Yeah.
And I've always done my fucking job. I turn up on time. I know every single line. I take it very, very seriously. I know how lucky I am to be doing what I'm doing. And I think, you know, as soon as you stop turning up on time and not knowing your lines and just handing cover coats to people without fucking saying thank you, throw the towel in, because there is no fear there anymore, you know.
100%, 100%. And that's really good and interesting to hear as well, because you are someone that blew up out of the world of Shane Meadows.
Yeah.
And the way Shane does a lot of stuff is so loose on the scripts and things like that. And when I spoke to Shimmy and even Michael Socker, they both kind of said that they struggled initially after that because they're going on to other gigs.
Well, you have to.
And they've got to have learned their lines and learned this and learned that.
It's a fucking nightmare. I mean, honestly, Shane, like, I wouldn't know how to put the right words in the right order to describe, like, what kind. I genuinely believe. I don't think he likes hearing it. But I genuinely, I think it puts too much pressure on him, to be honest. But he actually is a genius. I think he might be. And I find him to be just a fascinating character. Like, he's unbelievably likeable. I've never met anyone quite like him. You just instantaneously want him to take you under his wing. And I can't imagine the weight of that. Yeah. He must have a lot of people under them wings. And, like, you know, in a lot of ways, I think... You know, having the bits that I get these really intense bouts of time with men like Shane and ladies like Vicky and men like Michael Socker, you know, and Shim. But it's a very intense, intoxicating few months, and then we all fuck off again. It's the nature of the industry, you know. You all sort of go back to your normal lives. But the small windows I do get. I learn an awful lot from Shane, and I notice a lot of similarities in our behaviours, you know. And we've often laughed in the boozer about just the sort of stupid shit we've done and the way our heads think, you know. It is kind of hysterical. It's not where you're going through it, of course. You're fucking so deeply troubled you could just throw yourself naked off a balcony. But, you know, when you look back in reflection, actually, it's sometimes you... Your sadness is fucking hysterical, and that's certainly what I wanted to do with Brassic. I do some really stupid shit, like I've recently tattooed my eyeball. I mean, that wasn't a brilliant idea. I'm a fucking actor.
How'd that go?
I've tattooed the side of my head. I buy parrots. I don't know why I did that. Yeah. I don't know why I bought that bird, dude. Like, these cunts live for 70 years.
Yeah.
And this guy he's demanding. I've called him Ian. He's hard work. He swears in front of kids. I mean, he'll bite your kid's fucking lip off. You know what I mean? He's savage.
Yeah, that's a troubling one.
He's a savage.
But he's your savage now. You've got to deal with that.
Burden is what he is. Literally, that's not pun intended. He's like, and then we've got like, I do other things. Like, I can't stop buying fucking trainers now.
Right.
I mean, that's like, it's like turned into a bit of a fucking illness. Grifter, I showed Griff, producer Griff from Two Shot, and he was just sickened by it. And our mate John Lee found it hysterical too. And this is just, none of these will ever wear in because you've got so many of them, you know. I'm not showing off here. Fucking embarrassed.
That's it. Like, how do you find it all? Because I think one thing you seem to do really well is keeping yourself grounded in this mad world. As you said, you meet a lot of mad characters in it. There's a lot of good and bad. You will be shooting for months in America for Preacher, and then you'll be home. Yeah. It seems like when you come home, like you're proper grounded. You isolate a bit from world of showbiz. You proper come home to your mates.
I go to the woods. So I live in a derelict house semi-derelict now. When I first moved in, it were really bad. I lived in a tent I was kind of squatting. I remember this bloke knocking on once. He's like, "Are you squatting here?" From the authorities kind of a deal. He had a clipboard. I went, "Yeah." And he suddenly went, "Hear that cunt on the TV?" I went, "Yeah." "What the fuck are you doing living in here?" I went, I need to be alone. You know, it was a bipolar decision. I don't know why I did it, man. But I'm still in the fucking house.
Yeah.
And we've kind of started renting it, and my sisters and my mum, they've done it. They've worked really hard. They've made this little cafe, and they do weddings from there. It's called Spring Cottage, if anyone wants to go and have a brew. And I sort of, when I'm not filming, I live in this, like, sort of abandoned section of the house that's not been sorted out.
Yeah.
I didn't have running water for a good while, and, like, my toilet didn't work. I'll not tell you where I've been shitting.
I mean, there's an absolute beauty in that, other than the toilet not working. Yeah. But in the having somebody you can isolate yourself, particularly, we'll talk about the project that we worked on for one day together, but we were chatting and you were saying how you'd been tempted once or twice by social media, but kind of decided not to, felt it'd be too much and too dangerous. And particularly in the social media world, it's so hard to become isolated in a good way, like to choose to isolate yourself.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've got that. Again, particularly when your day job is you're going to be on set, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of people, a lot of people's names that you're not going to be able to remember all of them, and that's going to eat you up, and you'll be annoyed that you forgot that one person's name. And so many things to fuck you up.
Oh, dude.
So be able to go to literally an abandoned house in the woods.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate.
I mean, I've got to be honest, the social media side of things, it's not just that I don't know how to use it. I think emotionally, I don't want to deal with that. Yeah. I don't want to deal with the bullshit online. And honestly, I couldn't give a cow's cunt what Margaret had for a tea. I don't care. The fuck? Do you know, you get these people on Twitter and that, and it's almost like the things they talk about, it's honestly like they believe that the world's just waiting for them to get online. It's like, here he is, thank God he's here to sort everything out. You know, I don't know, man.
I've got theories about it. I honestly believe it's responsible for the rise of TED Talks, that everyone's got a TED Talk now. And I've been asked a few times to do a TED Talk, and I've said, I don't think I've got anything to say.
Chat about
I don't feel I need a stage and this, like, there's nothing I want. I like the podcast, but I don't feel I've got that. And I believe the rise in belief that we've all got something important to say stems from the dawn of social media.
Yeah,
from
absolutely.
Us doing an update every time you wake up and things like that, and going, oh, I need to let the people know.
Bill Burr did this brilliant... I'm not a fan of old Bill, but he can be a bit of a belligerent turd, can't he, Bill?
Yeah, but he can be wonderful as
very,
well.
Very, very funny. And he was talking about, you know, national disasters and these people that tweet, my hearts and my thoughts go out to the victims.
Prayers, yeah,
thoughts and prayers go out to the victims of this terrible disaster. None of them poor bastards are online checking for likes, you know what I mean? Like,
That's one of the things Anthony Jeselnik says as well.
Who's
in
that?
One of his things. He's a comedian. He's really good.
He?
Again, it's all quite... He got a lot of stick, or he gets a lot of stick, because he will always be the first to make a joke online when something bad's happened.
Yeah.
And his argument is the people who it's going to affect aren't there.
No,
the people who are getting offended are the people who aren't involved. Because if you've just been through a tragedy, you're not going, oh, let's see what comedian Anthony Jeselnik is saying about it on Twitter.
Exactly. And the thing is, just quit getting offended on each other's behalves. Fucking sensitive dickheads. Like, just leave it. If it's got fuck all to do with you, it ain't affecting you, leave it to the individual. Like, give them the opportunity to be offended on their own.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not your job to get online and put everyone straight. Shut your bloody... You know, tune out of that. If it's bothering you, tune out. You've got a ton of shit you can be... You know, it's like these, like... I got a lot of questions on Preacher, things like, what's it like being involved in a controversial show when there's enough controversy on the TV already? It's like, don't watch it.
Yeah.
Don't watch the fucking show.
100%.
Watch Love Island or something like that.
Me and Craig Parkinson were chatting the other day, and we were saying the same on the rare times you'll get a podcast criticism. Mm. Someone's like, I don't like this. It's like, well, don't listen. It's free.
No, fuck off. Go
it's free. Don't listen. It's, it's like, it's lovely
it's
that you're
free.
Here, but it's free. Yeah. You've not paid anything.
It's fascinating.
I don't owe you anything in that respect.
I think them people are just bloody irritable. They're irritated. And I know that because I'm one of them. You know, I get pissed off with stupid shit too. We're all the fucking same.
Yeah.
I was getting really irritated with this guy's collapsed shoes, this wealthy man with his collapsed shoes at the airport. Like, look at your shoes, man. You're fucking lunatic. Sort them out. Really boring. You know them pointy shoes?
Yeah.
That look like the if you were to take the shoe off, your toes would converge into that spine.
No one's
foot's shaped like that. You know what I mean? Hated him for
What's
them
the
shoes.
Need?
But, you know, anyway. So, what was your question? Did you have one?
Oh, it's interesting because... It strikes me the kind of the ice or the balance of your life seems interesting, because you've got the isolation of when you're not working, but a lot of the stuff you've worked on are real stories of groups of friends. There's real, like, obviously the This Is England thing was a family as much as friends, but Preacher instantly it's one of my favourite comic books, and instantly it feels like a real group of friends and a family. And Brassic's a great example of that as well. It feels like you can afford to go off and isolate yourself in the off times, because you're getting to do these projects where you're jumping into these deep, personal, intimate relationships for a limited amount of time.
I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's because, you know, this is the sad thing, is that I do I can make friends quite easily, but I'm not very social even in my tight friendship group from back home. And so, and because I can't really stand myself a lot of the time, I keep myself on my own. If I'm driving myself mad, I mean, I can't imagine what it's doing to right. other people. So a big part of it's that as well. And so I keep myself on my own. And I think it's a version of me, you know, these characters that I play, especially in Borassic, you know, this tight, tight unit of friends. It's the version I'd like to be. It's the friend yeah. I'd like to be to my close, dear friends that don't always like me, but definitely love me, you know. And so it's almost like some of Borassic is a fantasy for me. It's a fantasy world where I can deal with my issues and I shoulder problems like a real man.
Yeah.
You know, Vinny is, without question, like a cooler, harder version of me, certainly. Yeah. Like this industry softened me a great deal.
Yeah.
I think he was a version that could have been, you know.
Right.
Because I had access to that. Coming from where you come from, where we come from, some of the lads anyway, and some of the lasses, like, you have these roads you can go down. You have access to them. It's no problem. You can go down there, and you know where it goes to. But then I suddenly found myself, I was given a new road here in the industry and being an actor. And unfortunately, I took it. I didn't really know what was at the end of it, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And those roads are often the hardest ones to walk down, you know, the ones where you have to take a risk.
Yeah.
Not just a financial risk, but also, you know, there's a lot of rejection involved in our industry, as we've already spoken of. Like, and that can, you know, as used to it as you end up getting, you do get thick skin, but it still does affect you at times. Like, you know, especially when it's a passion project or it's a role that you fucking know you can do. It's just that you don't look like your son or you don't look like your mother or you know, it's the way of the industry, unfortunately. And like,
and it's, you know, mad how they will always get through to you at some point. As I said, you can get really good at just, I'm fine, I'll go for it, it doesn't work. And then that one role, and you won't be able to predict which one it is.
No.
It'll fucking break you. Because you'll be like, I would have done that so well.
Mm. There's a few I've had like that. You know, often I have this thing with auditions where I don't tend to, I put myself on tape a lot now, which is, it's the new thing. To put yourself on tape and send it off. That way you don't have to travel to these casting. I live in the middle of nowhere, so it's ideal for me. I can't remember why I was telling you about this, though. My bloody memory's awful.
I'm the same.
I'm baked. I'm on this new medicine. I've had to go up on my medicine.
Right.
And it makes me, we've been kind of writing about it. It makes me, it does make me very forgetful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare. The day before, it doesn't matter what fucking day it was. I was sat there trying to work out whether the shit I'd done to that day, whether I'd done it that day or whether I'd done that yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it can get. Yeah, it's fucking that's nuts. Intense. Yeah, it's a fucking nightmare.
Well, I mean, let's talk. I mean, we've not really said what Borassic is yet. And what it excited me is it's story of a group of mates, really. Working class mates in the north.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, that's been told a lot, but it was only when this started I realised I've not really seen the rural north. And I remember, like, from my touring days, was we'd be gigging in Manchester or something, and you'd get the Manchester that you've seen on TV or the Liverpool you've seen on TV, and then we'd be driving to the next gig, and we'd be over rolling fields and hills that we'd never knew were there, and you didn't realise how beautiful the north is and all that.
It is. It's a gorgeous place. And honestly, I just want to make this really clear right now. I'm in nowhere. I owe everything to Chorley and the rural surroundings. Like, it's, you know, it's a very oddball place to come from, I think, Chorley.
Yeah.
And I think most of the people who live there would probably agree with me. There's some real fucking characters down there. It's in the middle of the motorways.
Yeah.
And then beyond that is just, and looks like, it's as far as the eye can see, some of the countryside, you know. And I grew up, when we were very young, my mum and dad, they were a young family. We were a very young family, and there wasn't a lot of money. My dad worked really hard, and my mum would look after the kids. And we were fortunate enough to get, at the time, it wasn't all that cool to live in the countryside. People wanted to live in the town, you know. Yeah. Double glazing, central heating was kicking off. And my mum and dad got cheap rent on this sort of cottage with a lot of damp in it, and
right.
you know, and so we lived in this little cottage. It was we were so lucky,
yeah.
And I grew up playing in the woods. Never had an Atari or any of that shit.
Yeah.
I remember going to a friend's house, Robert Gill, when I was really young, watching wrestling for the first time. And I remember, you know, when the guys are like, "I'm gonna fucking grab his head and I put it all the way up his ass. This guy has no idea what's fucking. I'm gonna blah blah blah." And I remember looking at his mum going, "Does he really mean it?" And she went, "Oh yeah, yeah, he really means it, Joseph." And then they have this huge fucking amazing fight. Like I remember that all that was very, very new. It wasn't that it was kept from me. You couldn't get that in the woods. Like, yeah. I used to run around playing on my own, like, for hours and hours and hours. I had a very small social group growing up as a young man. And then, you know, my mum and dad, bless them, had troubles and they split up. And after that, I just kind of, I'd gone to secondary school. I was fresh off, I'd just come off TV, off Coronation Street. I think I'd started turned into a bit of a teenager, getting spots and stuff. They didn't really want me anymore. Like, right. Get out of here, you look like a fucking leper. So I had to leave. And you know, this, I'd become, I remember this lady telling me I was a has-been. I was very young and not understand. It hurt. I didn't understand what she was. And it hurt because I could see she was trying to hurt me. Like,
You knew that's the intent.
Hurt. Yeah, it was like the intent of it hurt. Yeah. I thought, what's made you say that? Like,
yeah.
There's this thing I've learned that some people can do. It's like this. It's called have you ever heard of this? The tall poppy.
No.
The tall poppy gets cut down.
Right.
So what happens is, you know, often if you appear confident or you're enjoying yourself, some people think you're full of yourself. You know, you need bringing down a peg or two. And I think that's what she was doing that day.
Right.
I remember that was a very difficult period of my life, and I had a fucking point to this which I've forgotten and all.
Well, do you think, I mean,
useless,
how was making the choice to go into acting, because it feels like that's not a natural avenue that you're going to be aware of if you're living in a cottage in the woods, you know, in Chorley.
Well, I couldn't read or write. I couldn't, as a young man, I really struggle, like, really bad. Like, I've got a PA on this job because I can't fucking read a thing. Like, yeah. I really do struggle, and that
often gets heightened if you're stressed and there's pressure as well. Because it's that your needs, the pressure's there rather than the relaxing into going, "No, that's all right, I can get that."
Dude, honestly, it causes me a terrible anxiety reading any academics, really.
Yeah,
and I've always been under the assumption that, especially as a young man, that I was fucking stupid, you know. I don't know whether I was made to feel stupid. I just felt that way, you know. I couldn't. All the other kids couldn't. I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'd act up. I'd misbehave, and I'd try and entertain everyone around me, and I'd be very distracted. And I think more than anything, it was a bit of a punishment, really, going to acting school. It was like, you know, you want to act the prat, you go in here, like.
Right.
And the guy who. The acting school was Oldham Theatre Workshop, which was ran by David Johnson, who was absolutely not to be fucked with. He was the strictest man. I've watched that guy make grown-ass men cry, like me and you. I remember him kicking this guy out for not being good enough. He was back the next session. He was back begging his way in floods of tears, you know. Yeah. Had people, you know, he saw people storm off because of him. And then the next week they'd be in begging, like, "Please have me back."
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because it's the kind of thing that I can look at and go, "That's not how you do things." But the amount of people I know who are great in this industry who hated their training, their schooling.
I was frightened of it. I was frightened of him, and I was frightened of letting him down and letting myself down. That's what he instilled in me. Fucking absolutely. If you are in my presence, you will always behave yourself. Like, I don't give a fuck who you are, what background you're from. This is my world. Like, he was like a fucking really posh gay drill sergeant.
Yeah.
Like, "You the fucking boy." I remember him bollocking me once, pissing around in the background. He went, "The fucking boy, you the boy." And no one, we're all boys. And then he went, "The one with the fucking hair." All of us have hair. And the longer you leave in it, the worse it's becoming. And it was me. And I remember him fucking standing me in the middle of everyone and just tearing me a new ass. Not tearing me a new asshole.
Figuratively.
Figuratively tearing me a new asshole. But he really did. He taught me a lot of discipline. I was a very mischievous child.
I mean, like, that feels like that's really stuck with you. One of the first things that we discussed was the fact that you're always so strict on learning your lines, on being ready, on being prepped.
I met myself bloody ill with it. Yeah, and I'm willing to bet that any single one of the kids that came up out of that school, they're exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, I was just speaking to, we saw Anthony Cotton's mum for a role. She was fantastic. He'll be one of them, Anthony. Yeah. I saw him at Oldham.
Yeah.
I used to be mesmerised by Anthony, actually. He played a dame in a pantomime. It was one of the first times I ever looked at an actor. I was a very young boy.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at him and he was sort of wading around and he had these high heels that he could really walk in as well.
Yeah.
Which is very unusual for me coming from the countryside. I've never seen a man in high heels. I didn't understand it, you know. Yeah. But he was just brilliant and he sort of really commanded the space. And his relationship with David Johnson, and they were so tuned into each other. And I remember being very, very young. And at that stage, you know, it was just a piss about, really, for me. Yeah. I didn't take it very seriously. It was just a thing I knew I was doing. I was just there. Kids are just there.
Yeah.
And so it was probably the first time I remember watching an actor and thinking, oh, I want to be that. I wonder if I could be that. I remember I did a job. I played an extra. I don't know why I learnt. It's funny. But I was an extra in a show called The Grimleys.
Right.
And I was very fortunate. They said, you know, we like what you do and we want to give you a couple of lines here and there and we'll make you a main feature. Like, we'll give you the shit wig. And so I was very lucky at the time to be doing that. And I remember one of the actors in this scene, surrounded by all these young lads, and I just couldn't take my eyes off him. I was watching, how would you be? Not when you're not acting. What do you have to look like when you're not acting? And he kept doing this with his hands everywhere, this nervous thinking, like, so I had to learn it.
Yeah.
I had to learn it. I was taking elements of people I'd see, things they'd wear. Like, I remember when I was little, doing Coronation Street, and the guy who played Ashley, he wore... who, by the way, coincidentally was a fantastic boxer in his day. He was really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he had a pair of Rockports, first time I'd ever seen him.
Right.
What are them?
Yeah.
These Rockports, mate. Like, these, what, you need to get yourself some of these now you've got a bit of money. So I did, I went and got myself some Rockports. And, like, I think what I'm saying is this industry being involved, it's definitely changed me. I mean... Like, if some of the things, if you would have told me 10, 15 years ago, I'd be the creator and producer of a show and be able to tell my story, I'd have just thought you were fucking nuts. I'd have just been like, you must be out of your mind. I can't write, you stupid cunt. I've got the figure of a reader and I'm dyslexic. Like, the fuck good am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I was convinced I was stupid, man. I really was. Like, for many, many years, I thought, I'm thick. I can't read. Right. I can't write. I must be thick. I must be. Like, everybody else, you know, people reading books. I hear about people reading books. They'll tell me, like, you must read The Psychopath Test. You'd love that. You'd really enjoy that. And I just think, I can't. I can't read the bloody thing. It must mean I'm fucking stupid. You know, the way I learn words, my vocab, the way I've had to learn it is, I'll hear you say something, right?
Yeah.
And I have to work out the context in which you've said it. Right?
Yeah.
I like the word. I'll go, I like that word. I'd like to keep that. So I think about the way you said it, the environment we were in. And then what I need to do next is attempt to use it. And so I'll wait for the same environment. And I have to hope that I'm picking the right word. Because I've not been able to, you know, I can't go about it in the normal linear way of learning. I can't.
Yeah.
And it's the same with my ideas. When I work with Danny, our writer, for Brassic, my fucking head, it's not in a linear way.
Yeah.
Like, I've got all my ideas. I can't really break down the story. Actually, that's not true at all. Because the way I started writing it was the show.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing. It was format was my biggest problem, and I couldn't type. So I'd write these hieroglyphs. It was like a scrapbook. And I'd take this to the writer and I'm like, look, these are my ideas. And Danny knew what to do. He was like, do you know what? Honestly, he went, these are fucking great, Joseph. Like, yeah. I mean, it looks like shit. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Like, that's ridiculous. But, and it's all back to front, you know. And, but what I was doing during that process of writing these hybrid books is I was teaching myself the stories. And I was teaching myself these new embellished versions of the truth.
Yeah.
To the point where I could ream it off to you, like, I'm reading the fucking Hobbit, like you're listening to the Hobbit. Yeah. You know, I knew these fucking stories.
Yeah.
I knew every single detail. But to get to that point, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
My ideas are fucking... Dude, it's a nightmare.
Oh, what's beautiful there, though, is because the thing that you've highlighted on three different occasions there is observation. And observation is absolutely key to being a good writer, right? Otherwise, you're just spewing your own internal thoughts with no awareness of how the rest of the world is. The fact is, you've observed. I remember the first time I was on any set, I was on this Guy Ritchie thing, and I had a similar thing. I was going to be in the background, and Aidan Gillen was going to be in the background, but he was in the scene before me. I was like, exactly as you said, I'm going to watch what he does.
Mm.
And the first thing I saw was, I was like, oh, he doesn't know he's in the background.
Yeah.
And that was the breakthrough. Yeah, completely. Yeah, his character isn't aware he's in the background. No. Why are you in the background?
Yeah, exactly.
Just be you.
Just be you.
You're
in the background.
You're in your foreground.
Yeah.
But you happen to be in someone else's background. And that was a breakthrough. So the fact that you can observe all these things and all these people, and you're observing words you like and where you receive them, that's going to allow you to tell stories amazingly, regardless of if you can format them or put them into an episodic situation where there's at 15 minutes there's a bit of a cliffhanger because there's an ad break
and so on and so
forth. That's the bit where someone like Danny, who wrote on Shameless and loads of like amazing stuff, that's where you find that collaboration, right? And he goes,
absolutely,
here's how we turn it into that thing on the screen.
He's the fucking key. He keeps all the keys, he really does. And I've got a bunch of locked doors, and inside the room is a fucking mess, like it's a terrible mess, and I'm there often sad and frustrated. Yeah. He has to come and go, it's all right, man.
Shitting in the corner because there's no
shitting all down my legs. Oh, it's everywhere. Nesting. I've made a weird nest. You know, like I do. He really is. He's
Danny comes in with the wet wipes and a bottle of water that is his mind.
Hoses me down and delouses me, and we set about cleaning it all up. But I'm so fortunate I've met Dan, and I've got other ideas. I've got, you know, of course, doing this, I've always felt like an imposter, man. I've always felt like they've made a mistake, they've accidentally hired me, and they're just going to be disappointed. Yeah. You know, I hate all my performances. I never feel like I've cracked it. And it's the first time I feel like I've kind of earned it. I've earned the role. All of us have worked really, really hard. It's taken 5 years, this, which is actually, in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty quick, 5 years, getting something on the box. And I've got to say right now, and I mentioned this quite a bit yesterday, and I know we all have to do this for our networks, like, but I am not shitting you when I say Sky have been fucking... If you've got an idea, take that shit to Sky. Yeah. I'm telling you now, they if it's good... And they like it. You will be just. They've been unbelievable. They just let us do our thing. And I've had to learn this during the process. Is there's an intelligence in just understanding that some people know what they're doing. Some people understand what they're doing better than you.
Yeah.
And just to let them get on with it.
100%.
Let go and let them get on.
Some of the best things in recent years is when there's a production company or a channel who've got faith in an individual. And that could be Donald Glover on Atlanta or Phoebe Waller-Bridge on Fleabag or whatever else. They've gone a Michaela Cole on Chewing Gum. They've gone, right, I can see this is great. I can't really add to this. I know that we need to just support that vision and bring it up. And that sounds like... Yeah. And again, I can confirm that this isn't just your contracted duty, as you were telling me this before we started recording. So it's like, dude, I can confirm it's legit.
It is legit.
Praise.
Like John Montague, he's the head of Sky Comedy, and Zai, I think it's Zai Bennett. He's one of the head of Sky. Met the guy above him last night. I can't remember that geezer's name, but you won't believe how nice these men are as well. Like, I mean, John's fucking hysterically funny, like unbelievably down to earth man, and has this huge, huge job. We went to this festival, and all got a bit pissed up at this festival, this like posh festival where all industry people go, like middle class festivals, fucking lobster everywhere and oysters and shit like that. Everyone's like, anyway, so So, but we're having a drink, and John goes, I'm going to go for a quick piss. Just watch me beer for us. And he fucks off for a pee, John. He's gone ages, bless him. And he comes back, I said, were they far away, the Bogs? He went, no, I've just been pitched four shows on the way back. It's a terrible environment for poor John to be in. Yeah. Like, you know, there's all these industry types of all these ideas.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, like, there's just an unbelievably huge amount of ideas that land on his table. You won't believe it. You couldn't possibly comprehend the amount of ideas people have. Some are brilliant, some are not so brilliant. But, like, it's still a lot to sort through.
Yeah.
And a lot of pressure. You better get it right, you know. But he's a very humble, lovely bloke. And, like, you know, good trainers on him as well. Always wears a good pair.
You've got to appreciate
a good shoe. A man who keeps a good shoe.
I mean, touching on pressure there, you spoke about how this character is one that you had created yourself, you knew, you felt you'd earned it.
Yeah.
How was it to go off and do Preacher initially? Because, again, we were talking a little bit at the time and sending some voice notes back and forth, because I know that you were excited but equally nervous to get out there
Absolutely,
and take on this
I was,
character
yeah.
that was this... And it's comic book fans. I'm one of them. They're so nerdy and protective of their children.
Yeah.
And it's a great character. So how was that in the lead up, and then how was it when you
had to
got
go
rolling
back to
and
it.
Yeah,
like it was like, honestly, I kind of love the sacrifice of it. My job as an actor is to, you know, because Cassidy is much more of he's much more of a character. He's a different accent. He's a different kind of lad.
Yeah.
He's slightly feral, Cassidy, and in all honesty, you do sort of turn into the character you're playing, for a little brief while. I think you do, especially if you're doing it enough.
I was going to say, particularly if you're so far away from home as well, so you're out there kind of excluded from everything as well.
Yeah,
so,
becoming a new version, new version of what once was, is what happens. Because you are sort of very much isolated. Your support group that you were so used to has gone now.
Yeah.
And
the people there are seeing more of Cassidy than they're seeing of Joe.
You won't believe it. A lot of the crew want to take me out on the piss and with drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I really do. Whatever character I'm playing, I try to live it. I do my best. I mean, I'm not a method actor. I think those people are wankers. Like, I'd never sink that fucking low. But, like, I do... It is important to embody what you're doing. But that being said, and in answer to your question, my biggest problem is the settling in period of getting there. Socially, I struggle.
Yeah.
Quite an awkward, intense character. And I need people to understand me. And as soon as they do, I can relax then. As soon as I feel like I'm safe. I know I'm safe with you.
Yeah.
I know I'm safe with Craig.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you know me well enough to know that no matter what I say or what happens, you'll understand it.
Yeah.
And I think new crews, that's not a dildo on a table, by the way. That's somebody drilling somewhere. Yeah. Just a really long, prolonged fart. But, my biggest problem often can be for the first month or two, And I'm sure everyone's the same who's involved in this industry. You know, like, when it's the bedding in process can be very, very difficult. Also, the medicine I take is quite strong for me mental health.
Yeah.
And when I change the times I take it, I start sleeping through the benefits of the medicine.
Right, of course.
So the next day, I'm not feeling the benefits at all. And my behaviour and my... just general mental health can start to really suffer, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not all bloody, you know, there are times when it's, I have to dig deep and get on with things, you know.
Do you feel the more you get to know yourself in that way, the easier it can become? Like, the more you know that, all right, the problem is I'm sleeping through the benefits of this and, you know, I need to adjust this or, you know, sleeping pills or whatever else to adjust to jet lag and all that kind of thing. Do you feel that helps you when going on to new sets? Like if you look across your career at how you would have felt, whereas now you maybe know, well, it's going to take me a week or two, but yeah. This isn't going to be it for the whole thing. I know that at some point it's going to click.
Yeah.
Here's what I can do to help it. Here's what I can't do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I feel there isn't sometimes it depends, man. It depends what kind of a state I'm in. Because obviously with me bipolar, in all honesty, like, around the time I was texting, we were talking.
Yeah,
I was really struggling. Like,
right,
and in all honesty, I've been kind of struggling quite a bit recently. I've ended up with this really this issue with my left eye. I've lost a lot of vision in it through stress, man.
Wow.
So when I'm like that, I don't know what's good for me, and I can if it's prolonged depression, I can go into a lot of self destruction. Because my medicine's not working, there's no break from it. And unfortunately, street drugs and drink gives you that break. It does.
Right.
It absolutely will. It won't necessarily be a good feeling, but you'll feel something different.
Yeah, it'll be a change.
It will be a change. And so I can often, sometimes I can fall victim to that. And I'm in a rush to get numb, you know. So it's not, there's no... So that when I'm like that, when I'm in that state, I just don't know what to do anymore. And that's when, and I'm very fortunate that wherever I go, I'll meet someone that I love and that loves me, you know, whether it be a friend. You know, whilst I've been away, and I'm going to shout these names out, I had two friends. I had Mackenzie Randall and I had Tobias Priddle.
Right.
Now, both of these two cunts, like, I genuinely... I really love those two men.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I would have done if they hadn't been there. Right. I mean, I feel emotional talking about them. I can fucking bawl my eyes. I miss them dearly. And I was in such a terrible state,
right.
You know. Now, again, I just want to be clear. I did my job.
Yeah.
I got up in the morning every single day. I was never late. I always knew my lines.
Yeah.
Did my absolute very best. And in that small window where I'm someone else, I'm not me anymore anyway. You know, it all goes away for like however long the scene lasts for.
Yeah.
And so it's just such a welcome break from how fucking stressful and restless my head can be.
It gives a focus. And as you said, it gives a break as well. It's its own drug. I need to learn this. So that can be, here's what I'm focusing on. As soon as that's over, right, so straight what am I focusing on?
Yeah, exactly. And if you've got nothing and you're anything, I mean, my mind's restless, and if I don't give it some shit to do, it'll go to a dark place eventually. It'll find its way there.
Yeah.
You know, well, Christ.
Are we going to start to wrap things up?
All right.
But there's two things I want to just mention quickly before the end. And one is, we've not touched on it, is Space Dads, which was a weird thing that we did, where we just spent a day. And again, it's weird because it feels like all the things you've said of all the pressures, they weren't there with that. Because it was... Mm. So we were recording the voice for an animated program that they're hoping to make. But because of that, there's a lot more freedom. There's a lot less crew.
Yeah.
So it did just feel like, it felt like, for me, everyone in the room just clicked. It was me, you, James A. Caster, Brett Goldstein, and
some of those
and a young
boys,
lady.
I can't remember names, but some of them, them boys in that, I mean, you were all hysterical.
It was just great, because everyone could
improvise. Yeah, we really
got
on. That bloody, what is it, All the Aliens Are Vaping.
Yeah, remember that one?
He was such a funny man. He was such a lovely, humble, funny guy. Some of those comedians, man, they were just... just to be in the room with them was such an education, you know.
Yeah.
And we really, really got on. I loved being with you, man. And, like, you know, it was Kyle's, I knew it. The guy I was linked to, the reason I ended up doing that was Kyle.
Yeah.
I'd got pissed up with Kyle and he was like, it'd really help, like, please be involved. And
yeah.
I just thought, great idea, man. And also, I'd been coming out the other end of what had been a bit of a bout of sadness and anxiety. So it was a nice easing way back into the industry, it felt, you know.
Yeah.
And I also did like a music video at one point. Who's this twat that keeps ringing? It's mad. It's a really long number. What the fuck? You know, who's that? Who is that?
That is a long number.
That's a dangerous looking number. That looks like money at Ord, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got extra bits at the beginning, which means it's from another country of some sort.
What's all them fucking bits? Anyway, so yeah, we did, and it never came into fruition. But it was a really lovely day that, man.
Yeah, it was
really
good fun.
I really enjoyed that.
I heard from them. It was either a year ago or 6 months ago, and they were saying, "Oh, we're still working on it. It's gonna happen." Yeah. But it was a fun day. Well, I'll wrap things up with kind of asking what's ahead. It feels exciting that with Brassic you've been able to be part of putting the whole team together, and that feels like a good thing for you and for any anxieties you might have going into projects. You're like, right, no, I've built this. I've chosen who's there. I'm not walking in a room again. Are they going to think I'm a cunt? Are they going to think or that? You've gone, no, I've chosen who's here.
Yeah.
So is that something that's
absolutely
on the cards?
You know, I've learned an awful lot about myself. I've learned an awful lot about the industry and I'm slowly, like, I wouldn't say I'm getting comfortable in my own skin. I don't know whether I ever will achieve that.
Sure.
I think it's a difficult thing to ask of most people, you know. Yeah. But I'm daring to say it. Like, I'm kind of proud of myself. I'm kind of really quite proud of myself. A couple of years ago, my anxieties were so bad I could barely leave my house, man.
Wow.
And I was convinced that, especially after Pride, I mean, I couldn't even buy milk. I had to have the exact amount of money to give the guy so that there would be none of this.
Right.
I was terrified, you know. Yeah. I was really frightened of everything and everyone. And I started initially, when I started writing Brassic, I remember thinking, you know, I don't have to be in it. I can write it and just stay in the woods. I can stay here, like, no one will see me. And I can still be a part of the industry somehow, because it's all I fucking know. And here I am now. It's 5 years later.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very lucky as well. But, I feel like, finally, my career feels like it's becoming a success.
Yeah.
And I'm very humbled by that. I feel very, very lucky. And I just don't want it to go away. I don't want to lose it. I want to work my ass off. Honestly, Pip, I want it all.
Yeah.
I want the whole fucking thing, and I want it now. Like, I want it all now. I want this new... It's like a new lease of life. Of writing it and creating it and being such a big part of all of it. I've always felt underestimated, and for the first time in my life, no one's underestimated. I'm being heard.
Yeah.
People are listening. And it's a life-changing thing. It really, it is.
I love it.
You know, I'm very lucky.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you very much
thank
for your
you,
time.
Man.
It's been a pleasure to
absolutely
catch up.
Absolutely. Finally do it, dude.
Yes, love
thanks,
it.
Thanks, man.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. How good was that? You could probably tell I was delighted to be catching up with Joe and delighted with how honest and open he was about the struggles he has. And again, his complete ability to overcome those struggles. I'm really, it's such a cool run of podcasts at the moment. That one last week with Sarah Pascoe is one of my favourite ever. And then straight after, we've got this one, which is just another absolute favourite. And next week, I've got another amazing chat with Serge Pizzorno, a.k.a. Serge from Kasabian. So, they're coming at you thick and fast at the moment. I've got podcasts recorded into October, and numerous ones are some of the best I've ever done. I won't say who, but I recorded one last week, as you hear this, and it's the first time in ages that we've gone to like 2 hours, and we could have gone for longer. We just ran out. Our slot in the studio ran out. I preview, obviously, all the guests on Patreon, so I tell you who I've had if you are over at patreon.com/scroobiuspip. It's only a dollar a month. That's dirt cheap, isn't it? That's like a pint every quarter, you know? That's nothing. Anyway, that's all over there. I've got some amazing guests to come. I met up with Chris and Stu last week, and we went on Kate Thornton's White Wine Question Time. I'm not sure the exact release date of it, but it was great because it was like a more civilized and well-researched and intelligent drunk cast, because Kate is an absolute pro and a legend of the broadcasting game in many mediums. And yeah, it was great to have a few drinks with my boys and with Kate and have a good old chat. And we spoke about, obviously, we've not done a drunk cast in a while. I think it's going to be an end of year one now. That's 2 years in a row where all we've done is the end of year drunk cast rather than several throughout the year. But honestly, when you see the guests I've got coming up and lined up, you're going to see why I haven't had time to get drunk in Stu's shed. But yeah, loads of good stuff to come. Anything else I need to tell you about? Pod Bible, as I mentioned, you lot who listen till the end are the hardcore crew, and I would genuinely really appreciate it if you could go and at least give the first episode or the trailer or anything of Pod Bible a listen, because I think as soon as you give it a little taste, the Pod Bible podcast, I mean, as soon as you give it a taste, you're going to be addicted, because it's just really good. Podcasters in general, apart from Chris, obviously, are some of the biggest fans of podcasts out there. So each week on the Pod Bible podcast, we talk to one podcaster about his podcast or their podcast, and then we talk to two about their favourite podcasts. And those, all of them all appear multiple times. So, for example, we've got Dan from No Such Thing as a Fish talking about how that podcast came about. And then we've got, who have we got on this one? Is it Kate Thornton or the Birthday Girls, maybe? Then we've got a couple of people recommending their favourite podcast. So, yeah, it's really good fun. And we also have a weekly roundup of the big news in the world of podcasting from Acast in each episode. So, honestly, it's really good, man, and you're going to like it. So, turn on, tune in, and subscribe. Thank you for tuning in, gang. I'll tell you what else, man. Last week's Distraction Pieces Network in general, it was absolute fire. Dan Lesac had Danny Wallace on Falling Forward, and Danny is amazing. A Hardcore Listing had top five worst things about a holiday. And if you know Stu and Chris, you know they're going to have got angry plenty of times in foreign countries. A Tuesday Night Jaw had a round table again. Stop and Search podcast, arguably the most important podcast on the network, had Nish Kumar on, which is amazing guest. It's such a good chat. Films to be buried with, we've had Jamie Dimitriou, who I've had on Distraction Pieces. I adore. He's got the second series of Staffelet's Flat starts soon. It, as this comes out, actually, it might have just started. But that's one of my favourite shows of last year. So yeah, there's been some amazing people. I feel bad because I'm recording this on... hang on, let me just check. I'm recording this on a Thursday, so I don't know who's on Off the Beaten Track yet. Oh, it's Daniel Pemberton. So again, yeah, just a week of stacked guests on the network. So go and check all of them out if you can. Yeah, that's it from me. Thank you for tuning in, guys. You've been wonderful. I'll see you next week with Surge. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.